Welcome to Behind the Smiles with your host, the Queen of Yappy herself, Dr. Gina Dorfman. This is a podcast where we interview some of the biggest leaders in dentistry, learn their stories, and share their motivation. Brought to you by Yappy, an automated paperless software for dentists and their teams. Book a demo today at yappyapp.com.
Hello, and welcome back to another episode of Behind the Smiles. I am here today with my good friend, Heidi Mound. Heidi, welcome to the show. How are you today?
Hey, Gina. I'm so happy to be here. Thank you.
You are in Hawaii. You've actually accomplished my dream. You moved from, where are you from originally?
Oregon.
Oregon.
You moved, Oregon.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. You moved from the West Coast. You moved all the way to Hawaii. Where in Hawaii are you?
I'm on the Big Island of Kona.
How fun. Let's talk about dentistry a little bit. Please share your journey in dentistry with us.
You bet. So 1989, I started as a dental assistant, actually. Had an amazing boss in the Bay Area who taught me so much. And I'm sure he had a consultant working with him, but He was a systems guy, very highly analytical. So I learned a lot. And we actually came from a front deskless office. Do you remember those? Have you been in dentistry that long?
Yes. And you used to be considered the office of the future. Uh-huh. We actually have a customer who has a front deskless office, but it just never materialized for most offices. Tell me about it. I'd love to hear more.
It is so crazy. So he's still to this day, he speaks all over the world internationally. He's still doing it. Basically, this office had a big saltwater fish tank in there, and you waved through the fish tank to tell the person who was technically the office manager, but mostly billed insurance. You know, back then we were a beta site for Dentrix. So, you know, we were still way behind, but they would wave and she would just turn on a light. We had the Kelcom system and me as that provider, the hygienist, whoever, we would come out, we'd get our patient and take them through the full process. So we would greet them, explain what we were doing, get the doctor, I would assist. Then do the post-op, schedule the next visit, collect the whole shebang and walk him out the door. Post-op calls and everything. And then he rotated assistants and in between we cleaned the rooms, reactivation and what have you. But it was very successful business. Back then, I think I was bonusing $700 a month.
It's oh, crazy. Wow.
Yeah. So it works. If you have your systems in place, your communication in place, I mean, we did a lot of role-playing, which I hated as an employee, but it really does work. And I did have like a 98% case acceptance rate myself. So it works.
That's incredible. Yeah. That's incredible. I want to hear more about this, but let's talk about you a little bit more. How did you, so you're a coach now. What was your transition from chairside to coaching?
Yeah, so transition was I gave birth to a baby in like 96, and she ended up a few years later being a special ed kid. So I had to raise a baby with that needed a lot of therapy and things like that. So I became an office manager where I had explained in the beginning, you know, I'd like to work 8 to 2, 8 to 3, something like that. And they wanted me so bad that I actually had a few jobs as an office manager. During that time, I was still very passionate about dentistry. I was doing study clubs. I was meeting doctors all over in the state of Oregon and California. And during that time, they tend to call me. And I was constantly coaching them, helping their team, helping their office managers, going in offices, showing them how to schedule, showing them this and that. And after my husband was decided when he was going to retire after 33 years, he's 9 years older than me, I decided I've got to do something different because I need to be with him. I don't know if you remember my story about my dad worked, you know, 6 days a week, 12 hours days, his whole entire career. As soon as he retired, he died. So it was a little bit of a game changer for me when that happened, is what sparked the interest that I have got to help more dentists be less stressed, and I've got to be with my husband and get my priorities straight. So I gave my boss plenty of notice. I was with her 13 years. And as soon as we found somebody who I thought could replace me, which took 4 years, I went ahead and trained her over a couple months and a little bit after. And then I decided to go ahead and retire, so-called, not me, but have him retire in Hawaii. So I work and then I go play. So it's kind of like I get vacation every single day. It's so crazy.
Well, I love your story, and I love how something so personal as losing your dad, you know, kind of helped you set your priorities and inspired you to start coaching and help other dentists retire earlier. Because, and I'm seeing this trend everywhere, dentists are working longer and longer and longer. And one of the things that I know you do is you call that revenue discovery, right? You go to offices and you help dentists find revenue that they can collect now, so that they don't have to work into their, you know, old years. Tell me about the process. What's involved?
Yeah, well, I mean, you brought up a few things. Most people are working more because they think they need to, and they really don't. We need to work harder, not smarter. And sometimes you need to invest time to create time. And I think that's where a lot of doctors go wrong. I have doctors that call me, they purchase a practice. Hey, my staff is not willing to work more. We can't make it on 4 days. We need to work 5 days or 6 days and Saturdays and longer hours and all this bit. And I said, well, why do you have to do that? And she said, because we're not making goal. And, you know, working more is not the answer. So I always feel so bad for them. I'm like, you are going to get so burnt out if you don't design your life. My boss of 13 years worked 8 to 3, and we got her down to 3 days a week.
That's wonderful.
You can work smarter. She had a child and wanted to be with them. She liked to snow ski. She wanted to do that. You can do it by working smarter. You don't, you know, you've got to look at those openings in your schedule as lost revenue. So if you have an opening or short notice canceled, you're losing that hourly rate. So if you're trying to make $500 or $800 an hour, imagine if you calculated all the hours that were open last year, how much money you lost. And so we've really got to take that daily goal, monthly and yearly goals, and break it down per hour and make sure you're doing it. One of the things I see in a lot of practices is the front desk is not really in control of the schedule, but they feel like it, and they make the rest of the office do what they feel is best, and they're not trained well. So for example, somebody could take on an emergency patient and then, oh, this person has a really bad toothache, blah, blah, blah. So they schedule a limited eval and a PA, and then they write treatment, and they extend that appointment down to an hour and a half or 2 hours, whatever they think that person needs. And then they bring it to the huddle. Oh, they're going to want a root canal or extraction, so I'm saving enough time for treatment, which is so bad. You have no idea if you have to refer that patient out. You have no idea if they can stay that long. You have no idea if they're willing to pay or going to agree. So it makes no sense when you can get an emergency out of pain in 15 minutes, whether you're opening, draining, cutting, incising, numbing, something, to schedule them the exact amount of time. So I coach my people that you need to guarantee that. They need to be showing up. They need to be financially arranged. We need to know exactly how much, because every 10 minutes adds up. And if we keep shortening appointments or somebody's leaving sooner or this or that, then you're going to have open time in your schedule. So it's super important for the front desk to understand how to schedule. You know, another thing I'll see is people just want to fill warm bodies in the chair anywhere. So let's say you have 8 to 10 open and they're putting somebody in for a half an hour. They put it at 9 o'clock. It makes no sense. Like, put it at 8 or put it at 9:30. But you can't stick it in the middle of a 2 hour appointment or you're not going to reach goal. So those are a couple of tips to get control of your schedule and the open time.
You know, I've noticed that a lot of times the way schedule works out is it's either way too hectic, or it's you know, it's just kind of slow and the day sort of drags on. And you're absolutely right. You know, with emergency, you don't know. You know, just you sort of like just get in here. We'll figure out what to do. We'll make it happen. And I think for a lot of team members, it's almost kind of like they're limited by their thinking that, oh, how are we going to get that done? I don't want a patient upset. I promise them that we'll do something, so I'm, you know, saving this time. And reality is you can probably take care of an emergency while doing something else. I mean, unless you're cementing veneers or something very, you know, focus intensive. And, you know, I see a lot of actually scheduling mistakes or lost opportunities where we're not even paying attention to our schedule. We don't know when someone cancels. There might be a patient in the back already in the chair that needs work, but the back office doesn't know that the front office just got a cancellation, so that time goes to waste. But I think a lot has to do with the doctor creating very clear expectations and training the team on what needs to be done with a schedule, as well as giving them verbal skills. You mentioned role play earlier. And I think that what I see often is that the front office is not trained to have conversations with patients, right? How do we train them to schedule better and to have better conversations?
Yeah, and sometimes it's not the front office fault. The back office is not documenting well. In other words, you know, you may go in and say, okay, let's get them in for a root canal. It'll probably take me, you know, 75 minutes or whatever. And then they get up to the front. The front doesn't schedule them because whatever, they got to go home and think about it. They're not good at closing, whatever. And then we call the patient back to come in. And it's like, hey, we're going to get that root canal. Now they're ready to schedule. And the front desk schedules 2 hours. Well, if they had a system to look in the charting or something to explain how much time we need exactly, because sometimes you'll go to prep a tooth and the crown's already off, the person has a root canal, and there's a flag saying the person doesn't use anesthetic. I know it's rare, but it does happen. I've seen assisted extracting teeth with no anesthetic. These people are crazy. But you only need 20 minutes on that patient. So the front desk, they're gonna schedule a crown prep. They're gonna be giving you probably hour and a half. And again, more wasted time. So it is a both front and back office challenge with getting the goals of the schedule appropriate to make it smooth. Role-playing, I think, needs to be according to their personality. We cannot hand them a script and say this, because it's not their personality and the patient's going to sense it. So I like to customize the role-playing according to the particular skill level and personality of that position. So I think the role playing is important, and honestly, do it in your interview process too. How many times do you interview people and they're like, oh, I do everything. I can clean a room, I can schedule, I can do insurance and past due and collect this and that, and I'm great at it. But then you're like, okay, so I'm a patient, and the options were, you know, a bridge, an implant, a partial, whatever, sell it to me. And they have no clue. So role play with them too, you know, put them on the spot on how they would discuss it, because what I hear is not good.
You know what? You're so right. This is what always worries me about hiring experienced team members, is that they bring stuff to my office that is not necessarily, they may have been in dentistry for 20 years, but that doesn't mean that they have 20 years worth of experience, because it does, you know, they may have never improved in, you know, they've learned something in the first 3 years, and then they kept doing the same thing for the other 17 years. So they don't have 20 years of experience. They have 3 years of experience.
Exactly.
They never learned more. And maybe they even learned stuff that's not good. I mean, I've done that during role plays, during interviews, when I asked them questions, and what came out made me cringe.
Yeah.
Made me cringe. Or having someone you know, come in and they say, well, you know, I've been doing billing and I do treatment presentations. And one of the questions that my office manager likes to ask is, well, you know, I'm doing white fillings on back teeth, on molars. What do I need to be aware of when presenting it to the patient? And we're so surprised. Like, someone's been doing billing forever, and they don't know about downgrading to amalgam with insurance or something like that. And it's like, oh my God, I don't know where you worked, but you know, this is not, I'm not hiring 20 years of experience here.
Right. So that's, I think the biggest challenge I hear that makes me cringe is, well, we can't do that because insurance won't cover it. Or what about, you know, it's always, but insurance won't cover it. And it's like, where do we get that mentality from? Insurance, you know, in 1989 was covering $1,000 a year, where that covered four or five teeth. And nowadays we can't get it to cover one. So we've just got to consider that insurance as help, you know, not coverage. It's not insurance coverage. It's not a catastrophe coverage. It's just right. A little help. So I like to just teach that, you know, look, it's going to cover your exam, x-rays and cleanings. After that, you know, don't count on anything. If we get something, great, but get them sold on what they want. Yeah, I think it's the most important thing, is getting them to value it before, so money doesn't matter. Because a lot of people come to me, how do I overcome these objections, blah, blah, blah. And I'm like, no, we don't want to overcome them, because that's arguing. That's backpedaling. We want to prevent them. So we've got to communicate in a way that prevents those objections about money. You know, money's always the objection. So figure out what else they want. Money, no one wants to spend money. But what else is it they want? We've got to figure out, is it aesthetic? Is it the least amount of time in the chair? What is it, so we can speak their language when we're talking to them?
Very true. And, you know, I've noticed team members talk a lot about insurance. This is like the first thing. Even when sometimes we call dental offices and what we hear as a patient is, I can make you an appointment. Do you have insurance? Right. And this, you know, and this happens when I'm calling medical offices, but it also happens in dental. And it's like the first thing, you're putting the insurance before anything else. And the patient, and you don't know whether the patient even cares about that, whether they have insurance or not. But you're putting that in the patient's mind right away, and you give that perception of being an insurance practice, whether you are one or not.
Yeah. Maybe we should start having our friends come in and act like a new patient and then rate the office. Tell them, check for this, this, this. Do they sound like they're smiling? Whatever. I remember working as one of my first jobs in ice cream. And the boss told me, I have my friends coming in here all the time. They're checking if you measure the ice cream. They're checking, you know, all this bit. And boy, it kept me on my toes. For sure. You know, because even here being on the island, I am having to reestablish eye doctors and dermatologists and everybody. And I literally physically go in, I call, then I go in, and then I ask a few questions. I don't just schedule. I want to know that these people care. And it is shocking. Like, I went into one dental office and she just basically, you know, I said, hi, I'm new to the island. I never tell them I'm a consultant. I'm brand new to the island. I'm looking for a new dentist. I've had two dentists in my life, so I'm a little nervous. I just give my true story or whatever. You know, I really want, I'm looking for Can I meet with the doctor for 5 or 10 minutes or whatever? And I swear, they're like, so do you have dental insurance? And I say, yes, I do. But really, I just want to meet the doctor and find the right office, blah, blah, blah. And they're like, okay, well, you know, which insurance do you have? And I'm like, I have Delta, but it really doesn't matter. And they go, okay, well, we don't take that. We're not a member, so we'll go ahead and bill it for you, but you'll be responsible of paying. And I'm thinking, wow, where's the, you know, sure, let me give you a tour, Nope, still not happening. And it's pretty scary out there. You know, I'm used to being on an island. A lot of it is fee for service, which, it, you know, I totally get. Who wants to write off all the, you know, a third of their money and stuff? I don't mind, as long as it's good. So definitely getting to know. I walked into a medical office and I said, is there anything you can tell me about the doctors here? And they handed me a HIPAA form, literally. We have this information. And I said, okay, thank you. And I walked out and got in, and it was a privacy policy, whatever. And I showed my husband and we rolled our eyes. Of course I didn't go back there, but it's been very interesting. But I've had a lot of great experiences too. One office I walked into, and it was a medical office, and I just wanted to look at it because you can tell a lot by, you know, how outdated it is or whatever. So I walked in and looked. I'm coming out, an employee in scrubs come out and said, good morning. I walked in, another person, aloha, and another person is asking if I needed help. I mean, it just went on and on about every single employee did not just pass me because I wasn't their patient. And that sold me on the practice right there. But then when I went through the whole process, it was so consistent all the way through the process. So I think training your people that everyone matters, it's not just your patient, you know, even going out and saying, we're going to take really good care of you. Anything helps ease that person. You know, it reminds me of a story. My husband needed a neck injection, you know, the steroid one where they got to put you to sleep. And you don't get to meet the neurosurgeon. You meet, you know, the nurses and everybody, and they have a, I don't know if she's in kind of a PA of some sort who does the whole neurosurgeon workup, and then you get your shot. But throughout the process, every single employee was very comforting, but we never saw the doctor. And then we get there, they all walk in with leaded vests, like they look like, you know, just, I don't even know, Arnold Schwarzenegger, like but lead vests everywhere because they're getting x-rayed the whole procedure. So the anesthesiologist, the nurse, I mean, they come in, they look pretty scary, but they came in and each person, you know, oh, Dale, if I needed this done, this is exactly who I'd get it done. The next person come in, you know, I'm going to take your blood pressure, but you are going to be so well taken care of. Dr. So-and-so is so amazing, blah, blah, blah. So like 5 or 6 people later, by the time the doctor get in there, we're like, yeah, let's go do it. Right. We didn't even know the doctor. So I think a lot of it has to do with you want to so-called sell your products, goods and services there. You have got to brag about your doctor. You've got to brag about each other. And I think it's just really important for the patients to be comforted.
This is gold. This is really gold. And I know it to be true. I actually, I told this story on the podcast before. I had a new patient in the chair. She was extremely nervous. And, you know, I walked in and I said, I know you're nervous. We're going to take great care of you. She said, I know you were highly recommended. I said, oh, really? Who recommended me? And she said, Carmen. I said, oh, Carmen, the one, the front office? How do you know Carmen? She goes, I don't. But when I called, she said you were the best. And see, for a patient, they're not thinking, well, they're trained to say that. You know, they're being paid to say that. And I am the best. You know, that was just, so that was completely genuine. But it's so important for the team to sell the doctor, to sell the practice, to sell each other.
That's so important. That's a good point too, because a lot of people prejudge. So you have a shopper on the line who's price checking. You have somebody who's asking if you take Oregon Health Plan or Medicaid or this or that. And, you know, instead of just, nope, we don't, you'll need to call the back of your card or whatever. You know, it's like, oh my gosh, that's, you know, I think I know a couple names I can give you. And you know, are you new to the area? You take that time to get to know them. Hey, if you ever, you know, switch employers or whatever, just some way to invite them back. I got a lot of new patients because I treated them nice. They're like, you're the first receptionist I've talked to that actually spoke with me and had a conversation, and they did come back a year later. So every action you have represents your practice, and you really got to be nice to these people, even if they're mean.
Yeah. And you know, if insurance changes, they might have an HMO today, but you know, it'll change to a private plan. We've had patients that had HMO and still came to us. Maybe they went in and you know, they tried their whatever free exam and cleaning, and they realized this is not the right office for me, so they went outside of the plan even though they still had that HMO. We've had patients that said we can't go here for one reason or another, but they send their friends and family. It all counts. And you're right. We prejudge. We get stuck on insurance during that new patient phone call. And I mean, the statistics are actually pretty bad. And I don't know where I heard this from. I think Howard Ferrand might have talked about it at the last townie meeting. Where you presented there, didn't you?
We were there, yeah. We had fun together.
Yes, that's right. So he was talking about something like out of 100 phone calls that come in into the practice, 30% are missed.
Yep.
And 30% schedule, 30% don't show up. And I think a lot of times we hear that new patient exams have a very high no-show rate. And I think what really happens in many cases is that they make an appointment and that maybe they schedule them too far out because, you know, people, they'll schedule an appointment for 3 weeks out, but then the motivation to go to the dentist subsides and they don't keep the appointment. Maybe they find another dentist who can see them sooner. But I think the other reason is something happens during that phone call that doesn't convert the patient. So they schedule an appointment, but then they hang up and they just have that feeling like maybe that's not the right place. And they don't even bother. And like the, you know, while they're waiting for that appointment to take place, they lose interest to come in.
I totally agree. Yep. We need them to hang up going, wow, I chose the right office.
Yes. Yes, exactly. And you know, we talked about scripting and, you know, role playing. And I think that has to do a lot with it. We need to make sure that we are very clear with our team how we want them to answer phones. And we need to give them verbal skills. Most people don't, you know, don't pick up the right verbal skills intuitively.
Exactly. Right? Yep. Or they get stumped. They don't know what to say. So then they're like, I don't know. And it's like, no, that's never an answer, right?
Yes.
You know, let me get that answer for you. It's a great question. I'll get the right person. We'll call you right back. And then make sure you call them back sooner than you say. So instead of saying, I'll call you back in 10 minutes. Well, if it's 20, you didn't do it right. So give them extra time and then beat that time.
What do you feel is the right amount of time for a typical dental practice to invest into training?
Sure. And, you know, every office has different sizes, different amount of openings, different amount of employees. So, you know, sometimes when there's people that have 8 hygienists and 13 leaders, you know, what have you, you've got to break it up into departments and things. But I think the bare minimum is 1 to 3 hours a month as a team. I think doctors should be actually meeting with individuals to meet with them and make sure we're actually connecting with our employees. I like that done every 6 months in the beginning. I like that 30, 60, 90 day. But every 6 months is really important. It means a lot to the employees. I think there can be leaders in the practice who meet even only 15 minutes, even if it's a hygiene team coming together saying, hey, we're going to meet and we're going to make sure we're all calibrated and measuring the right way. We're as close as possible in our measuring. But pick an item. I don't care if it's a safety meeting where, hey, is anything broken in this office? Do we have all the OSHA, whatever? Do we know what to do if there's a fire? You know, whatever. But pick something that's important and meet, you know, consistently. Put it in your calendar to do that yearly or every 6 months or something. But ultimately, you know, when it comes to running the office, so like you said, the communication, how are we going to use Yappy within that, which I think is great when people can just communicate, the patient's here, we're ready for you in hygiene, what have you. I think it's great. If you look at your software, most offices aren't even using 5% of it. You can look at your iPhone, you're not using 5% of it. So it's all about priorities. We've got to pick what's a priority. If our priority is gaining new patients, we've got to focus on our marketing, whether that is our conversion, whether it's ground marketing, whether it's social media, whatever it is, marketing is done within the office. That's where you're going to get the most of your great new patients is by your VIP patients referring to you. So how do you want to spend your time to create time? Because the more you can do comprehensive care or in-house dentistry, the more time you're going to have off. So it's work once, get paid forever. That's what you want to think is, you know, we're going to create a system to run like an ecosystem or a well-oiled machine. We've got to focus on training. So maybe ask your team, what's a challenge we're having? It could be, geez, you know, the back office is coming to the front. I have no idea what to schedule. Then they changed all the treatment back there. So I sent the patient away because I'm updating the treatment plan. Well, that's money walking out the door. So we need to get the back office to not bring the patient up until it's fully edited and entered in, so we can set complete and collect the proper amount and schedule the next whatever. So you've got to figure out what are the challenges, and this team knows what the challenges are, right? The schedule's too crazy in the back. Well, why is it that way? Where are we scheduling the blocks? How are we scheduling the emergencies? We've got to dig into it and have a talk about it. So pick what's important. If you are a dentist that, I would say a big complaint is they're working too much, right? A lot of them are focused on way too many things. You know, I like dentists to spend about 4 hours a week building their practice, refining their practice, accomplishing the non-clinical things. So you got to block yourself off that time. Get off early, go be with your family, go on your date nights. You know, don't let work take over your life or you're going to be miserable. So I think just picking a goal and then sticking to it until you reach that goal. Don't have so many irons in the fire that everybody's going nuts, because staff don't like that. They're like, oh my gosh, this coach has just got us doing so much stuff. We can't even keep up and can't even do our own job. That's not a fun place to be. So I like to break things down really simple. And creating time is very important. So if we say, hey, you know, we're not having time to review these charts and whatever, and you spend, you know, 3 minutes reviewing charts to make another $10,000 a day or $4,000 a day or something, wouldn't it seem worth blocking off 30 minutes to review your charts? It just doesn't make sense. So that's creating time. So we just got to figure out what the issue is and then figure out how to create more time.
Let's talk about something you mentioned earlier, the one-on-ones meeting. So you hired someone you like, and you mentioned you have that, you know, sit down 30, 60, and 90 days, and then you sit down with them, you know, once every 6 months. And I think it's very important. We call them the one-on-ones in my practice. Mm-hmm. We actually have a 2-week follow-up once they get hired for the first 3 months. And we sit down with their department lead. They bring their job description. And here's the thing, this blew me away. I was speaking at a conference. It was California AGD. It was a few weeks or maybe like a month ago. And I asked, how many of you, like, let's see a show of hands, how many of you have written job descriptions? And almost no one raised their hand. Yep. I'm like, please email you, I'll send you mine. Like, you gotta have job descriptions. How can you train someone, you know, if you don't have one? So they bring their job description and we kind of go off, okay, have you mastered this? How are you feeling about this? And then we continue with those one-on-ones. But tell me about your process. What is the process that you recommend?
Well, employees like to know what to expect. They want to know they're doing a good job. And so if there's no checklist, then they don't know what they don't know, right? So, you know, if you have a dental assistant, you're gonna first start with, you know, greeting the patients with a smile. How are you gonna introduce yourself? Then you're gonna take a blood pressure, build some rapport, right? But the basics are gonna be taught, how to clean and sanitize and good body language, whatever. And then maybe, you know, later at that 60-day mark or 30-day mark, you know, you're making sure they're queuing up the doctor correctly, routing the patient to the appropriate person. How do they hand them off? What do they say? How's their inventory control? You know, how are they maintaining all the equipment? And then 90 days, you know, you're going to make sure is everything consistent, right? Are they using the intraoral camera? Do they know what to say to a patient when they're doing that? How are they educating the patients? What are they doing about the lab cases, right? So there's got to be something that they go, yeah, I'm doing all this. And when you're meeting with them, you're like, wow, you're doing really good at this and this and this. You want to sandwich all that in because you know you're going to have things you want them to learn. You know you're going to have things you want to discuss. But what is going to be their key metric to add to your practice? If you're paying them $150 a day, how are they adding that to your practice? You know, are they looking for x-rays that are due? Are they, you know, retaking them when they're cone cut, or you come in, you're like, I can't see anything, you know? They should know to take more responsibility and following up. So always set goals for them, you know, from now on. You know, anybody with a Google account, I want you asking for a review, or anybody, you know, make sure you're asking every patient how their visit was today. And if they compliment you, you know, let them know how much you'd appreciate a referral. You know, kind of, you're always stepping it up a notch. People want to learn, believe it or not. I've talked to high gymnasts and people that have done it 20, 30 years. And they're like, I wish there was more continuing ed. That's what a lot of employees get bored. And so make sure that we're just keeping on that checklist, making sure they're doing everything, but give them something to report back to an office manager or a dentist. You know, what is the key metric that they're reporting back? For example, a front desk reports in the morning, hey, there's, you know, $3,000 of over-the-counter money I need to collect from patients today. And then she should be able to report, I got it all except somebody postdated a check for $100, whatever. But have them report something so they can go, yes, that was a good day. A lot of people are going home going, we survived.
Yeah.
They're just running like crazy going, we survived. When we've got to count our blessings and we got to know that, you know, we're appreciating each other, high five and great job. Because people totally, the biggest complaint that employees tell me is they don't feel appreciated. And that's because we're just working, working, working and going home. And they don't understand. I had a boss that wouldn't do performance evaluations. But as a manager, I sat with them and she would come or not come. We just report back. But they were like, you know, I do want to know how I'm doing and I do want to improve. And I'm so glad you do this because I have no idea if I'm doing a good job, if you guys are happy. Right. So we set financial goals and I never say, and you need to production, collection, whatever. You know, I was working with a hygienist once and I said, you've hit $50,000 of production in June so far. What do you think you can hit for the year? And she's all, I don't know. What do you think I can hit? I said, well, let's set a goal. I think you can hit 110,000. And every month I told her where she was at. She may have stepped up 1,000 or 2,000, but every month I'm like, now you only need to do this amount per month. So I'd always divide it amongst, you know, the remaining part she had to hit with the months left of the year. And she went to 115. And I said, I knew you could do it. And we bonused her big time at Christmas. So they like those challenges.
I love that. You hit on something very, very important. Employees do often feel underappreciated because they simply don't know. Like, we get into that mindset like, well, if I didn't say anything to you, then you're doing fine. But they need to hear that. And I think that the millennials are more in need of that continuous, you know, feedback, good feedback or even negative feedback, any kind of feedback. We want to know how we're doing.
Yeah. Text them.
Right.
Do anything. Yeah. There's, you know, you did great. I loved how you walked that patient out with the umbrella and helped her to the car while it was raining. Anything. It doesn't have to be. I know some people are like, I'm so frustrated with my staff. I can't even think of anything to say. You know, then it comes to some leadership and other issues that have to be dealt with, but we should not be frustrated. We should not have team members that suck the energy out of you. You will just be so thankful when that employee is gone, when you realize that. But that's a big issue, is keeping people that are cancer to the practice.
Absolutely. And my mantra is kind of, you know, saying that if people continuously disappoint you, it's on you. if you're frustrated with your team to the point that you can't find anything nice to say about them, that's on you, doctor. Mm-hmm. That's very unfortunate. You know what? Time flies when you're having fun. Before we sign off, I just wanted for you to take us through the coaching process. Like, if someone wanted to hire you as a coach, what would the process be?
So it's interesting. There's a lot of different consultants out there. I'm very different. I do not do the in-office coaching unless I want to go to another island or some fun. In general, I do it all over a video conference called Zoom. We record it. You keep the coaching. But we work together every other week, and I have all different kinds of programs. There are people who can't afford the six-month program I offer or what have you. I have a la carte coaching where it's one phone call you pay for, and it's so simple. So I would definitely reach out. I have a free coaching Facebook group called Coaching with Heidi Mount. And that way you can ask questions, you can listen to other dentists, but I'm on there constantly. Something comes to mind about hiring, I'm on there teaching. You just listen to whatever videos you want, but I'm trying to serve as many dentists as I can. A lot of Facebook groups want me to speak in it and what have you, and it gets very time consuming, or I lose like people are like, I asked the question, you didn't answer back. I can't keep up on all the Facebook groups. So I decided to have my own. If you want information, I'm there for you. I do monthly calls for free that people can ask questions. But ultimately, you know my heart. I'm just out there to serve and make a living. So if they want to hire or look into me, they can certainly go to my website, which is coachheidimount.com. If they want to get like 10 secrets to increasing tomorrow's revenue, I have a landing page called coachingdentist.com. And they can check it out there, but you can find me on the internet. I'm just super passionate about what I do. I don't know if you can hear that, but yeah, happy to help in any which way. So, you know, the way I coach is strictly over the computer. We actually screen share. I have my eyes on your practice, and you know, the reason why people hire me is because they're frustrated, they're plateaued, they're missing a lot of revenue, going backwards, not getting anywhere, whatever. I'm the one that helps you make $500 more a day on tomorrow's schedule, and that is per employee.
Wow, so that's amazing.
Easily done.
And I'm thinking this online coaching is actually a great idea, and it works great with your schedule because you're like 3 to 6 hours behind civilization.
Yep.
So it, you know, doctors can do it during their, you know, non-clinical hours, and I think that's a great great idea.
Yeah, or lunch. It's great because people can only handle so much. I mean, if I came in your office and blasted 8 hours worth of information, you're going to be exhausted. We're focused on that one frustration or those two or three systems that we can just refine every other week. It just goes so smooth. Nobody feels overwhelmed, like I can't get this done. They have the aha moment of, oh my gosh, it's all I have to do. I mean, we work at systems how we get less people at the front desk. So you're not checking out every single patient. It's not necessary.
Very good. I love everything you said. I know you're super passionate and also super smart. Love talking to you. We definitely should bring you back and talk a little bit more about the hiring process.
Oh, I love it.
Thank you so much, Heidi. Have a wonderful rest of your day and enjoy the weekend.
Thank you. You too.
Bye.
South Ahoy.
I'll definitely visit you. I'll take you up on your offer to visit.
Absolutely.
Guys, in case you missed it last year, the Voices of Dentistry is coming back on January 24th and 25th at the Hilton Scottsdale Resort and Villas in Scottsdale, Arizona. It is your chance to hang out with some of the coolest people in dentistry. When I went last year, I felt a little bit like a teenage girl at a Justin Bieber concert. But if that's not good enough of a reason for you to join us, here are my top 5 reasons why you should sign up now. Reason number 1, do it for yourself. Dentistry can be stressful, so take a break, hang up your drill for a few days, and come to the VOD to hang out with your friends, make new friends, get inspired, and just have fun. Reason number 2, do it for your practice. Voices of Dentistry has a great lineup of speakers, most of them are wet-fingered dentists who are crushing it every day in their practices. This is a fast-paced event that delivers tons of actionable information in an engaging and fun way. Some of the speakers this year are Dr. Joshua Austin, Dr. Mike DeTola, Dr. Mark Costas, Kira Dent, Dr. Jason Lipscomb, Dr. Alan Mead, Dr. August de Oliveira, Amy Morgan, Dr. Justin Moody, Alistair McDonald, and Dr. Kevin Fryer, just to name a few. And this year, I have the honor of speaking at the Voices of Dentistry. Reason number 3, do it to meet your favorite podcasters. All of your favorite podcasters are going to be there. And trust me, they're even more awesome in person than behind the microphone. This is the place to be if you enjoy listening to the Dental Hacks, Working Interferences, the Dentalpreneur, the Dental Practice Heroes, Dental Drill Bits, the Millennial Dentist, Dentist Implants and Worms, the Dentist Money Show, and many, many, many more. If you come to the Voices of Dentistry, you won't just get a chance to meet them. You might even get a chance to be on a podcast or two. Reason number 4, do it to get away from your computer. You've been tied down by your mouse and keyboard for too long. You might benefit from a change of scenery. Come to the VOD and meet the cool folks you've been chatting with online. And reason number five, for those of you who are living in cooler climates, this is your chance to escape the frigid weather at home and warm up in sunny Scottsdale. Did I mention they have a pool? So as Alan Mead would say, do it. I will be at the VOD and I hope to see you there. Go to voicesofdentistry.com to sign up. See you there.